Where are you from, and how did you end up on Prince Edward Island?
Toronto.
Okay.
Born in Toronto. Both my parents were born in Toronto. And, let's see, how did I end up? Well, friends of mine that I knew in Toronto, I'd known one guy, this is Marv Paisner's his name, but anyway, we had known him for a few years. This is going to like 66, 67, 68. So anyway, in sometime, I guess in early 70, he'd quit his job and was just sort of floating around, and I was still working for Canadian Pacific Airlines. But he discovered that there was cheap land to be had in Nova Scotia. So, we got that confirmed by somebody that had actually been out there and bought a place, so it wasn't just a wild story. So anyway, he decided, well, that's what he was into. So off he went with his girlfriend, and in the summer of 70, and they ended up in Pictou County, and they couldn't find anything. It drove them nuts. Like every place they went, it was better than the previous place. And then they ended up seeing the sign to PEI for the ferry. So off they went. And then they went through to, were headed into Charlottetown on the Murray Harbour Road. Right. Yeah. So they're on the Murray, you know, the Murray Harbour Road, you know, 24?
Yes.
All right. You go through Caledonia anyway. They got to Grandview, and there's an old store. And there were two in that community at one point. Anyway, this is Martin's. It was Dr. Martin's old homestead, and he had a store. So there's a store. There's a with the floor out of it, and there's a sign on the side of the road with a phone number in Charlottetown, land for sale. So he drove down the lane, and there's this big Victorian farmhouse. I think the windows were still in it at that point. So anyway, they get into Charlottetown, they phone the number, and they ended up doing a deal. They bought it for, I don't know, like $3,000.
Right.
Oh yeah, it was like 50 acres, and you know, the house and the old store and another storage building beside the store, and a whole lot of old apple trees, because the doctor had an orchard as well as the store.
Mm-hmm.
Quite the cat in the area, and he would have been the main guy in the whole area, I would say. Anyway, sold eggs and whatnot. So anyway, they bought it, and then they came back to Toronto and both got jobs and started working again to kind of get some money, because the plan was to go out there in the summer of 71. And then I got involved, and we ended up buying a truck between the two of us to carry all our crap.
Yeah.
So away we went. Yeah, it was a 66 International Harvester four-wheel drive panel truck. And they had a 51 Meteor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they bought that out in Calgary a year before that, and for like $200, and they drove them from Calgary to Toronto, and then they drove from Toronto to the island in the summer of 70 and back again, and then eventually sold it like 10 years later for quite a bit of money. So anyway, yeah, that's the story. We ended up back here and that summer.
So that's 1971?
Yeah, this is the summer of 71, middle of May. Friends of ours also, another couple that we knew, were into the same sort of thing as, like, looking to leave the city. Anyway, they showed up on the 1st of April. They couldn't wait.
Yeah.
Fools. They took a train. They showed up. They had, like one coat and one heavy sweater between the two of them. So they got on the island on the 1st of April, and they were sorry they came. But anyway, they ended up meeting Sally Large. I don't know whether you know of her. And that same summer, I found the land that I'm on now.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, they had their place, and I was staying there, but then I was started looking around, and so I ended up finding this land, and there was a little house on the front of it, but by the time I got it together to find out whether it was for sale or not, it had been sold to McGuigan's up in Ocean View.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the sons is going to move there and get married and move into the house. But anyway, he did, and it didn't work out very well. They buggered up the well, and so they weren't living in it. So I went and talked to them, and I bought the back 45 acres off them.
Mm-hmm.
He'd bought the whole place,
yeah,
like half of the original farm, 50 acres with the house. So he kept the front 5 with the house, and I got the back 45 with the woods. So that's where the bakery is now.
Why did you decide to leave Toronto?
I've been working for Canadian Pacific Airlines for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know. I was going all. I got to go lots of places, but I wasn't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know. It was a big company. It wasn't. It was a pain working for the company. They were assholes, quite frankly. They weren't particularly fun working for them. I wasn't particularly enjoying myself, and this seemed like a really, it just seemed like the thing to do at the time. You know what I mean? The city just, I'd lost it. I had my own car, and I was doing all right, relatively speaking, but I don't know, it wasn't, the airline business wasn't really going anywhere at all.
Did you have friends that are already going back to the land?
They decided to do that. They wanted to unplug, two of them. They sort of unplugged from, he used to work for the Toronto Historical Board.
Okay.
But then they proceeded to get part-time jobs. And he met up Linda. She was with Linda Sherlock. She was from Calgary. And anyway, they were floating around, and a bunch of them lived in a house that was a part of Rochdale College.
Okay.
On 22 St. Joseph Street. Yeah, Rochdale College was a legitimate college at one point,
right.
Initially. And it was a legitimate thing, so more or less, but they had a lot of housing requirements or whatever, so they Rochdale, through U of T, rented houses in the area. I think U of T owns half of downtown Toronto, actually. I believe everything south of Bloor and west of Yonge, mostly. So anyway, they did a deal with us to rent, for student accommodation, and then of course they probably turned around and sublet it. Whoever was handling the rentals turned around and sublet it to whoever wanted it. There were a couple of grad students on the third floor, but there was a bunch of people that I knew. I never lived there, but that's sort of where everybody came from that ended up, that little group. The two that came in the 1st of April, he was living in 22 St. Joseph. And there's several other people here. There's little clumps of people that sort of knew each other from various areas.
Yeah.
Toronto, some more from around Kitchener area. And they all, just sort of ended up, one would come and the word, I don't know how the word got out, but, the word would spread and around it go and, they ended up here.
Mm-hmm. How many people ended up living there in this first house?
The first house in the summer? Jesus, let's see, it was Marvin and Linda, Ralph and Kathy showed up. Early, and then we finally got there in the middle of May. So it was five, and then other people would drift in. Rona, Ralph's brother, showed up, and over the summer it was probably five or six.
Mm-hmm. And what was the plan? Was there much planning beyond getting down to Prince Edward Island? Did you know where you were going next? Or
nope. We had the place, and like, I quit my job, So, you know, at CP, so I had to wait because I quit. And unemployment at that time, this is in April 71, unemployment insurance was well established in the Maritimes, but it didn't pay much.
Right.
Okay, it was like, you know, I don't know, I think I was getting like, I finally got a check, and then I had to wait for quite a while, and I think I got my first check forwarded from PEI. I had to move to PEI, and that screwed things up. And I think the first check I got was like $38
yeah.
a week. So, and then it was Trudeau was in, and everything changed. They changed unemployment insurance regulations, and they increased, and people who were on the old system got bumped. Were increased. If you were on a had a claim, your amount went up. So I went from like $38 to $60.
Oh.
Yeah. This is the first job I worked for Hallam Sporting Goods in Toronto in 66, 67. And that's what I was making, $60 a week. So here it is. Here it is, like 3 years later, and I'm getting $60. And at that time, it was 8 for $44.
Mm-hmm.
Work 8, collect for 44, which yep. adds up to 52.
Right.
Yeah. So, and if you had maximum stamps, you could collect. You could earn more money. I mean, for quite a few years, you could. You could get along very nicely, especially if you had maximum stamps. I mean, they changed it. It went from 10 weeks up to 10 weeks. But you can still collect for a year and, and make at least as much money, if not more, than a lot of people who were working.
Yeah.
You know, like $8 an hour or $6 or $7 an hour, and a lot of people were working for less than that.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I did it again. I did it a couple times. Like, I came back to 75, 6, and 6, 7, I think. I came back to Toronto and drove cab for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get enough stamps together so I could go back and spend the summer and spring and fall on PEI.
Yeah.
I didn't, I wasn't living on the property at the time, but eventually I ended up buying an old school and moved it here.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I bought the Valleyfield West School.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and I've met people that went there, actually. The guy I bought it from got all his education there, such as it was.
Did you move that to Lewis?
Yeah, I work for Lexus McQuaid off and on, part-time, just to make money. And he was into doing all kinds of stuff, including moving buildings. So I'd done a few, jacked up a few buildings with him. So I had an idea what to do
mm-hmm.
and how to handle it. So, yeah, I rented a float and stuck it on. It's 20 by 25 feet.
Yeah.
So it's not huge. Anyway, yeah, no, I hauled it out here and sat it here and then eventually put a foundation under it. And oh, there was grants around to fix up your home, so, bingo, I put a foundation under it, got a well. Yeah, it's been pretty good like that over the years. And then eventually it became, I was just living it, and eventually it became a bakery.
Uh-huh. When did you start the bakery?
82.
Okay.
But I had, prior to that, like I did the cab thing, that was good for 2 solid years or more. So then I'm back and I got into a health food store in Montague. There's a woman I know that, Pam Martin, she started it, and Linda, of Marvin and Linda,
mm-hmm.
She was a partner in it for a while, and then she sold out, and I bought her share, and so there were three of us involved in this store in Montague. So we did that for a few years, from, say, 78 to 81 or so, and then we sold the store. And then I'd started baking already
mm-hmm.
from the store. We had a little tiny mill, so I get into it, and I was reading all the time. We sold books and stuff, too, so I was up on all the latest stuff for bread and, the way it should be. So that's how it started with this.
Your land in Lewis, did you buy that when you first moved to the island back?
Yeah, that was 71.
Okay, so you...
I ended up buying it that first summer.
Okay, still there. What did you, did you get involved with gardening or anything like that?
Yeah, when I moved on to it, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, prior to that, I was moving around.
Yeah.
And spent a couple of winters in the city and that kind of thing. But, yeah, everybody else did. Anybody who had a permanent spot, they were all gardening. Everybody got a garden going.
Yeah.
And as soon as I moved the place here, the first summer I was here, I went out and, cleared a patch and got a garden going. So, yeah, I did that for a fair number of years until I get into the farmer's market.
Okay.
And that was in 82.
Okay. So you can...
Yeah, 82 is the market. I started in there, and then I was, doing more baking, so I just ended up letting the garden go. It's got blackberries and some oak trees that I planted. That's about all that's in it right now.
So you have 45 acres?
Yeah, more or less. It's approximately, it's probably closer to 43.
Mm-hmm. So how... Do you use that land? Are you using it for firewood? Or?
Yeah, I did initially. Used it for the first couple of years. I actually went out with an axe.
Yeah.
The buck saw. I can't believe that I did that.
Yeah.
But, I had more energy then or something. I don't know. But yeah, no, I got wood off of it. And over the years, I've sold some of the firewood. Some of it got worked on. Mm-hmm. There's been various forestry programs along, and I get involved. I was in a focus group for a forestry thing. Some of the original, the first major forest regeneration and whatnot plan came through. And I knew about it because I was in the focus group, so I got in on that. I got a survey of the property done, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, for nothing, which was good because it was half of a 100-acre farm, so the inside line wasn't there. I mean, it hadn't actually been surveyed or anything. It had just been divvied up. So, yeah, that came in handy. And some little patch of woods was thinned, and then just so 6-7 years ago, I sold off that lumber. But it's the wood. There's good hardwood at the back, so that's still there. And I've been planting hardwood on it too over the last few years. I haven't for the last couple because until I figure out some way that they can survive better. Some of it did, but the government were giving you trees and actually, crediting you, sort of paying you to plant them. But I don't know, the survival rate with the yellow birch was about less than 10%.
Yeah.
And the red oak was okay. It wasn't too bad. It's worth doing, I guess. But it continually gets chewed off, and then eventually it'll get up there. But some of it's worth doing. There's an awful lot of stuff around here that got cut and then replanted to spruce.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big major forest. The forestry went in the wrong direction, as far as I can see. They went softwood.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the forest here is Acadian forest, and it's not all single, it's not all spruce. The fact that there's so much of it around is because it's old fields. It's grown up fields and I guess they were land was played out so the acidity was enough so that it tend to favor softwood like spruce. So they seem to be concentrated on planting a lot of that. A lot of people I know here have survived on tree planting.
Mm-hmm.
I know several, one family in particular, the whole family have been doing it for a long time.
Really? One of the things that's been really interesting is community. And I have a little note here that Dr. McEachern passed on to me about the 5 Ks of Lewis.
Oh, yeah.
Story there.
Yeah, if you're looking at the road or the map, I'm on the Lewis Road, and I'm near the corner of the Selkirk. Okay, so I'm on, I guess it's the south side.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a Nectal, so that's K. And then down the road, the next place down the road, fairways down across the Selkirk and down, it's called the Garlock Road.
Right.
Garlock. But anyway, further down there, that was Katz's, who came from the States. We'll see you know, if you want later, but his son's living further up the road back towards me now. One of the kids is settled there. So anyway, that was Katz's, and then the next one along was Kolazar,
right,
which is Kay, and she's a potter. She's still there, too. She's doing pottery. And then around the corner, down at the end of the road, the end of the Garlock Road, you go left, and around that corner of the first place, I think there was an Islander in there somewhere. A weird old guy living in a shack.
Right.
But anyway, the next place was Kirsch, Hayward Kirsch, and then after that it was Crow's Cup.
Okay.
Yeah, and Crow's Cup, I know for sure, they got their land from Dignam's. Maybe Kirsch did too. And I think several people in that area.
Is there anything special about, you know, a sense of community among you people?
Yeah, that
don't seem to be from away, you know, that...
Well, we did. It's funny, the community is a word, too, because we had it was a community at the time, back in the 70s, late 70s, when I moved in there, and I think it was 78 or 77. And I moved the place that in the fall, and then I went back to Toronto and drove cab, and then I came back that, I think, the summer of 78 and moved in. And for the next, 4, 5, 6 years, there was a whole bunch of us down there. Kip Smith is down, further down the Selkirk Road, and Paget's, and there was a bunch of us. And, yeah, we had a food co-op.
Mm-hmm.
The Wild Oats Food Co-op, which ran for, 5 years.
Uh-huh.
We'd bulk buy.
Oh, okay.
You know, like bulgur and, you know, raisins and, you know, whatever stuff we could from the last few times it was from a big health food store in Nova Scotia, Wolfville.
Right.
Yeah. And they had at one point for a couple of years, I don't know whether it had a name or not, but there was like a community school.
Really?
We got the use of a house down around the bottom of the same road Kirsch and Crosscops were on. And, Kathleen Katz and several other people set up a little school because they had kids.
Yeah.
Katz had two kids, and the other people had kids, and Megan Williams and Tony across the road. The names have changed. Some of them are still there. Tony's still there, but he's not with Megan anymore.
Right.
my phone book's pretty funny. I've got an old page of one, you know, I don't know when, probably late 70s, and the name pairings are a lot of, they're different.
Yeah.
Now. Like Megan Williams ended up being a major bureaucrat with Canada Council.
Okay.
But Tony's still here. He's a tree planting contractor. And he's living with Gwen Davies and it used to be Frank and Gwen. Frank Patch and Gwen were living down in, a little further down, and another one, part of the group. They build a place, and yeah, they were all over the place.
Yeah.
Hey, and like, I don't know how many of it would have been, a couple dozen, 20, you know, maybe 2 dozen people, kids and whatnot, and it would, you know, food co-op, the school, and then eventually people moved away, and a couple split up. Frank split up with Gwen, and actually, I just saw Frank this summer. He's in Whitehorse. He's environmental, works for the territory, I guess it is or province, whatever, in Whitehorse. He's an environmental guy. But, it sort of community lasted for, I don't know what, from late 70s to early 80s. Okay. You know, 5, 6, 7 years maybe.
And what do you think led to the end of that?
Well, I don't know. The longer you're there, you get more rooted in, and the kids started going to the main, you know, it was mostly a kindergarten but for the kids. It was for a couple of years there, and you end up having to get a job of some form or other.
Right.
You know, so I'm working in the store for a while, and then I start the bakery, everybody just sort of went their own way. Kathleen ended up dying of cancer quite a while ago now. So, and they went back to the States for, you know, a while. They kind of split up, but they ended up back in the States. And then the kids, one of the boys moved back here. Amon, he's back living on the property, built a house. Married a local girl, married a waterman. And, he's still there, but his father's, he comes up, he's down Florida.
Okay.
Robert and Kathleen, they were original people that were there. They bought a lot of, there's also a lot of land purchased in the area from Bill Matheson,
mm-hmm.
who was a local wood guy, wood contractor. I know his son. He's still around, but he sold land to a bunch of different people. He had woodlots, and he would go in and cut lumber. You know, like big saw logs and stuff, and he had lots of land. So he made good money on it as far as he was concerned. He was, getting a good price, but. You know, back then you could buy land, buy woods for less than $100 an acre.
Yeah.
You know, for a long time. And when I bought my property, the going rate for woodlots, for overgrown farmland is what it was $15 to $20 an acre.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. You know, I mean, it wasn't even very good firewood on a lot of it, except at the back. That lasted for quite a while. Right into the 80s, I've heard of people buying land for, 100 an acre, $5,000 for 50 acres.
What's the reaction of islanders when you came to the islands in your group?
We get visitors on Sundays.
Yeah.
And it's funny, in the area in Grandview, there were a lot of tobacco farmers.
Right.
That was tobacco country. So we for a while, until we got our well fixed up, the Teslas up the road, we went and got wet water from them. And Bill was a neat guy, and he didn't understand why everybody were calling us hippies,
right.
Which I still resent. I consider it to be a label,
right.
Which I do not appreciate. And then nobody, Bill was, he couldn't see anything, he just was interested in us and why we were there. But yeah, the locals. They didn't know what to think, quite frankly, a lot of them.
Really?
We get people pulling in the driveway. They wouldn't get out of the car. Half of them were drunk anyway. Like, Sundays was bad around here at that time, like, out in the country.
Yeah.
Oh, man, everybody drove around and drank.
Right.
So with a case of beer in the car. So this is the younger locals, the regular. There weren't that many people in our area.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, on my road, and it was only the McLeans, and he wasn't there half the time. You see him chugging down the road in his Mercedes. He had a diesel, Angus had a diesel Mercedes for years.
Right.
And out in this area, it was all clay roads for miles.
Right.
Like, there was no pavement, so there weren't a lot of people around. So basically, it was in our immediate area, it was us. But, we have, about Emerson Gormley?
No.
You ever heard of him?
No.
Well, he helped us out the first year. We met him. Marvin and Linda were looking for a wood stove.
Right.
Okay, and so they were down at Murray River, and they heard, so, well, we went and talked to a couple of little local old boys sitting around, and they said, oh, we'll talk to Emerson. He collects junk. So they met Emerson, and Emerson, of course, had a barn full of, quote, junk, which was basically antiques, and he had a half a dozen wood stoves. So he was intrigued by Marvin and Linda, and he sold them a wood stove and then took it up to them, delivered it to them, because one of his many businesses was trucking. He had a trucking license. His son's still running a trucking business from Charlottetown to the East End. He had, you know, commercial trucking. And like a one-ton truck. So he delivered the stove to them, and then later on that summer he helped us with the well, got us a pump, and then later, I think it was the end of that summer, he helped us put the roof on because the place was leaking, and so, you know, we reshingled the roof, and he had every he could do anything. Mm-hmm. But he was a fascinating guy, and like he was intrigued by us. You know, other people basically didn't know who the hell we were or what we were up to.
Mm-hmm.
But there were exceptions, and Emerson was one of them. And he was, you know, I worked for him. You know, when I help him out in the trucking, when if I needed any money, I could, you know, I would always get a few days work. You know, hauling. He had a regular freight run every day.
Mm-hmm.
Or every 3 days, or every other day, or whatever, he'd be into Charlottetown hauling freight and hauling, you know, going into Canada Packers.
Yeah.
When the Packers, you ever remember that in Charlottetown?
Canada Packers?
Yeah.
Not really.
Oh, man, that was the biggest, it was a huge plant, and it was the largest meatpacking plant west of, or east of Quebec City.
Right.
They made everything, the entire line, from wieners to, you know, you name it. They made bologna, they made the whole range of stuff. So we'd be in there taking sides of beef down to some of the little stores in Murray River, and on the way, too. Because there were stores, you know what it was like, there were stores all over. Every community had a corner store.
Sure.
Like Grandview and Ocean View. I don't know whether there was one in Ocean View, but there was Iris and up to Selkirk. Yeah, they were all over the place, but they all died out, of course.
Yeah.
I don't think there's hardly any. Cooper's in Eldon is one of the only ones that's left in the whole area, I think.
What does the term back to the land, is that one that you use yourself?
No, I don't think so.
You're okay.
We realized that's what we were doing, and we kind of maybe adapted it or something if we heard it from somewhere. But no, I don't know what we were doing. We were just getting out.
Yeah.
You know, leaving the city, and yeah, it was. Whether we actually use that term, I don't really remember.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could have popped up, but there's just a few books around there. The fire fox. There was a couple of books around that everybody used.
Yeah.
You know, what was it? Foxfire or something?
Another one you're talking about.
Yeah, and there was another one called Stalking the Blue-Eyed Scallop.
Mm-hmm.
It was about food from the seashore.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we read that, and then we found mussels down in Murray River area. We found a big bed of mussels.
Mm-hmm.
We read about them, and ooh, these are damn mussels, great. Yeah, so we grabbed the mussels and had a great feed until we started hitting the pearls in them. They were big, and, you know, they were good, but, they, you know, so, you know, it was, I don't know. We basically didn't know what the hell we were doing as far as living out in the country. But it was the availability of cheap land.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cheap property. We became landowners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, great. Lots of people, I don't know, they bought whole places for ridiculous amounts of money when you think of it now.
Yeah.
You know, 50 acres and a house. And for an extra $500, they threw in the stove and the fridge. on the washing machine. it was crazy. It was like $3,500. And anyway, so there was lots of that.
Mm-hmm. What's the most difficult thing you had to contend with that maybe you didn't predict at the beginning?
It's surviving financially, mainly.
Yeah.
You know, getting through the winter was a bit of a strain, too, because some of the houses were pretty shitty. The one we started out in was pretty, you know, the windows were all out of it for one thing, so we had to buy glass and then putty all the windows. So we had to sort of become like little carpenters and whatnot. But, yeah, surviving the elements and stuff, but mainly economics, you know, like it was, how do you make enough money to keep going, you know, so, and unemployment insurance was a big factor that kept everybody going for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, like it changed like that and bang, you only had to work 8 weeks and there's lots of agricultural stuff around and, I never actually did much of that. I did the cab thing for a couple of years, and I went up. I spent a year up in Yellowknife. Like the winter of after I bought the property in '71, I left. I tried to sell the woods.
Really?
Because there was no house, and it was in the middle of nowhere. None of my friends lived in this particular area at that time. Yeah. They did, like, 67, after I moved the place there, like, 8 years later, 7 years later, there was a bunch of people up and down the roads. But, I didn't have a job. So a friend of mine in Yellowknife was a prospector, so he said, well, come on up, and we'll both apply for the grub stake and go out prospecting. So, so I did that. You know, I drove up there, and I still had the property because I didn't end up selling it, thank God. And then I came back a year later. I spent exactly a year in Yellowknife, and I came back. And, of course, I'd been spent the last 6 months in Yellowknife working in the mine. So I had unemployment. So there's another year. The whole most of '73. You know, I was taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
I forget how I got the rest of the time. But, you know, that's the biggest struggle was coming up with something to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and basically, and it was pretty limited at the time. You either get a government job or, you know, what? There isn't a whole lot going on. Other than agricultural stuff, which none of us really knew anything about. So that was the main one, I would say. And it's, you know, everybody's managed, the people that have stayed have, you know, come up with something. A lot of us are independent, too. You know, I ended up, you know, I got into the store, and then I started doing the bakery. And, you know, it's pretty small scale, but it's kept me going for 26 years. You know, and mainly because my overhead is dick.
Yeah.
You know, my taxes are ridiculous. You know, my taxes are about equal to the Waste Watch bill.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, it's woods, and I'm on a dirt road.
Right.
And I don't know whether they've ever figured out that I got a bakery here or not. It certainly doesn't look like one. Even though there is an addition off the side of the building now, you know, it's in the middle of the woods, but that's the secret to survival is for me anyway is low overhead and you know I own the land, it's paid for, the house is paid for, and I got a direct marketing outlet in the farmer's market, so that's working for a whole bunch of people. But that's the biggest hassle around here is coming up with something to, you know, enough to make enough money to get by on.
Yeah.
Because it's, I don't know, it's changed a lot now, you know. I mean, there's a lot more government work. The government's, Christ, we got more bureaucrats on the island than anywhere else per capita, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Lawyers, too, I would think. And I don't know, if you did a little survey on it, I think you'd find that PEI is, we're loaded.
Yeah.
Lots of feds, too. I mean, the DVA, when they came here, that was a real boost.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're still coming into the farmer's market.
Really?
They're retired now. A lot of them. But they feel we got a whole boost from that. Because there was this whole new crowd of people, a lot of them speaking French.
Yeah.
And whatnot, and yeah, it was pretty amazing. It's like another wave, but they all had jobs. there's been waves of people coming here, you know, and over the years. But back in the what you're talking about in the 70s, we all showed up here, and yeah, nobody had any clue how the hell we were going to survive. Some of them had professional backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, had university degrees and were ended up got into teaching. That's a big one for a bunch of them. One of them, Jesus, she ended up a principal. B.J. Nicholson. Well, she's not Nicholson anymore, but I mean, that's another couple that ended up finally not staying together. But yeah, there's some people like that could slide along like that. You know. You start out doing supply teaching.
Right.
That supported a bunch of people. And Ross Petrie, he's a plumber. And John Russo, the major bricklaying, you know, fireplace contractor. And both of those guys took courses at Holland College. Ross took the plumbing course, and John took the bricklaying course. You know, this is like 25 years ago.
Because
there was, you know, what were they going to do? I think they both had degrees or not. I'm not sure. I think John might have, but, you know, what's to do? So, and there weren't a lot of jobs that anybody was particularly interested in doing. We're being of somewhat independent type people anyway. We unplugged to the point of leaving wherever we were at and coming out here. So working for other people is not something I can relate to.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the experience I had, and my dad worked for the phone company for 4 years in Toronto.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it destroyed them. The last 15 years were a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a terrible place to work.
Mm-hmm.
It was a second level. It was a management, and they had five different levels.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I saw that as I was growing up, and my experiences with Canadian Pacific. I think that's what a lot of people found. You know, they were just didn't have much to offer. You know, the standard sort of situation where, you know, get a job and work for 30 years and then retire. Didn't really work. Hey, I'm gonna retire, and I got 4 years to go, and I can get the pension. If there's any money left, I don't know. Yeah, but I think I'll probably still keep baking, and I'll think I find somebody who wants to buy the business.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people are surviving. I know a bunch of people. There's several. They're working for the CBC. Rick Gibbs. He worked for CBC for a long time. Carla was teaching.
Yeah.
So that's a standard sort of one. They tried farming for a while. They were into pigs.
Mm-hmm.
And whatnot. And there's a few. Not many anybody that's really got into farming seriously. Yeah, it's been quite an experience, actually. You know, I'm really glad I did it, too, you know, because I don't know where I'd probably be dead if I was still in Toronto. You know, like, it just worked out really good.
What was it that kept you on PEI? Was it just the fact that you had the land?
Well, yeah, eventually, yeah. I came back because I knew everybody out here. Mm-hmm. And after being up in Yellowknife for a year, and, you know, of course, I had unemployment. And it was the perfect place to collect unemployment.
Right.
Because you never got hassled. it just, you know, I knew everybody. I had the property, and eventually, yeah, I moved on to it, you know, and finally I ended up living out here on the land, so, yeah, it's, you know, and after, even by 73, I don't think there's any way I would have ever moved back to Toronto, you know, it just didn't really wasn't a factor. or it wasn't in the cards at all. It was, well, I naturally headed back here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.